Welcome to the Twinkle Talks EYFS podcast. Working in the early years is busy, funny, messy, and exhausting. Join me, Shana, some of the Twinkle EYFS team, special guest speakers, and other early years practitioners as we talk honestly about our experiences. Whether you're listening for CPD, on your commute, or to help you relax, Twinkle EYFS will share everything you need to know about all things early years. Hello, lovely listeners. It's Shana here from the Twinkle Talks EYFS podcast, here to bring you another great episode all about the craziness of early years. And we've got a really special episode today because I have an interview with the wonderful Lucy Lewin. And we're going to be talking about that dreaded phrase, COVID catch-up. How are we going to conquer it? All right. I know it's been a while. When we recorded this episode, it was nearly 4 years since the first lockdown began. So we thought it might be a really good time to talk about the effects of COVID on our children, because it's probably more than likely that the majority of the children in your settings were born either during or after the first lockdown. So 4 years ago, right? So let's see if we can tackle it together. Lucy has some really good advice that you should definitely take into consideration. I can't wait for you to hear about it. But first, we're going to play a little game. We put something on social media a couple of weeks ago. You might have seen this trending on TikTok and on other social media sites recently. It starts with, of course, I. So there's been quite a few we're going to do today. I'm an early years educator. Of course I. Let's see what results you gave us. Now, before I get started, we had loads of responses on social media. So I've picked quite a few that I want to share with you about what you said. And I'm going to group them into two categories. One, the hazards of the job. And two, superpowers. Like, there's definitely two different kinds of I'm an early years teacher, of course I. So let's kick off with the hazards of the job. I'm an early years educator. Of course I have a freezer full of toys frozen in ice. Yeah, Hannah Crisp, me too. There's no room for food. What are you talking about? I'm an early years educator. Of course I've put my finger in poo while checking a nappy. Oh, Leanne Ducker. We might not admit it, but we have. I'm an early years educator. Of course I've pockets full of random toys, stones and twigs. Yep, Stephanie Marvin, I'm pretty sure you're speaking for all of us there. I'm an early years educator. Of course I don't know what bodily fluid the stain on my top is from. Oh, Jenny Hodgkin. And given the choices that it could be, I'm pretty sure we don't want to know, do we? Ignorance is bliss in this case. I'm an early years educator. Of course I have dry, sore hands from washing them. Hayley Dixon, me too. Get that moisturiser, girl. I'm an early years educator. Of course I'm covered in paint. Jackie Hunter, sounds like a great day to me. I'm an early years educator. Of course I have all the lurgies. Kate Marriott, don't we? You know what? Every half term and end of term as well, right? It suddenly hits us. Why? I'm an early years educator. Of course I have glitter in my bra. Mandy Shirley, look, if you can invent a magic bra that does not collect glitter, I will pay you all my money. And the last one from the hazards of the job category, I'm an early years educator. Of course I have a bogey on my shoulder. Kelly Cusack, that's just what happens when you get down on their level. You know what I'm saying? This is just what happens. This is the price we pay. Bogeys on the shoulder. Okay, so that was a great category. Now let's look at the other category. I would call them superpowers. So here we go. I'm an early years educator. Of course I know multiple stories off by heart. Oh, Hannah, Charland, me too. Which ones have I got? The Very Hungry Caterpillar, pretty much every Julia Donaldson book, John Klassen books. I mean, take your pick. We got them all. Related to that, I'm an early years educator. Of course I change my voice when I read stories. Look, Rachel Rooney, look, we are just wasted in this job. CBeebies would be begging for us, okay? Let's put our applications in now. I'm an early years educator. Of course I know the Baby Shark dance. Thanks, Sam Owen Smith. Now I've got that song stuck in my head for the rest of the day. I'm an early years educator. Of course I look at a cardboard box and think of 100 uses for it. Shelley Allen, that junk model. You want it made, we'll make it. Guitar, done. Car, done. Aeroplane, no problem. We got this. I'm an early years educator. Of course I make up songs for everything. Jade Prest, it's a skill. All right, you need to brush your teeth. Let's make a song. We need to tidy up. Let's make a song. We need to put our shoes on. Let's make a song. I'm an early years educator. Of course, I dress up in silly hats. Julie Carter, no one can pull them off like we do, just saying. I'm an early years educator. Of course, I can spell out words to my colleagues so the children don't understand. Katie, you know you're good at that one when you can spell C-H-O-C-O-L-A-T-E really quickly and get those snackies in without the kids realising. I'm an early years educator. Of course, I could recognise a nameless painting. Robin Lee, again, people would pay money for this skill. And I'm going to leave you with something that's lovely. Nice wholesome comment here. I'm an early years educator. Of course, I love my job. Thank you, Claire Hickling. Me too. Oh, that was a really good one. You know what? I think they were absolutely hilarious. Thank you for everybody who took part. But for now, we're going to get on to our main event of the episode, and I'm going to be talking to a very special lady called Lucy Lewin all about conquering COVID catch-up. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am very excited to talk to you because I feel like we get on very well anyway, and we've had a lot to talk about, and now we get to share with the world what we've been talking about. So very exciting. But before we get there, please, Lucy, tell our wonderful listeners all about you and what you do and how you are involved in the education sector.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, I'm Lucy Lewin. Thank you so much for having me. I'm the proud owner and founder of a 85 place day nursery in the Midlands. But I've also got the Profitable Nursery Academy, where we support single site nursery owners, small chains and childminders to really understand the business of business. Because for me, that's where my heart lies.
Perfect. And that's what we need. We need more of it. And I think it's a really actually important time for us to talk about and talk with business women such as yourself. Because on the day of we're recording, the spring budget was announced. Fun times. And obviously, there's a lot going on in early years in terms of the funding and the childcare hours going, increasing, and et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of businesses, especially independent early years businesses, you know, trying to find funding, which is quite difficult. And I think one of the difficulties a lot of us come across, even if we're working in schools or we are working in independent nurseries, is, and I'm going to say it, it's the big COVID word, COVID.
I know.
You know, and you know what's really strange? At the time that we're recording this, right, in 10 days, it will be the 4-year anniversary of our first lockdown. So 4 years ago, it all started. And I'm just a little bit like, it gives me a little bit like, oh yeah, we did go through that, and oh, what a weird time. Yeah. And then it got me thinking on about, hang on, actually, we've got children in our settings that were born in COVID lockdown and afterwards. And of course, that must have had a massive impact on children, nurseries and parents and families, right?
I totally agree. And I think that's that stark realization, isn't it? That there is no longer a child within our early years that was born before COVID. Right. So, you know, straight away, one of those first things that I can't believe that I still hear as an educator is that bit catch up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I get a little bit on my high horse about this. And I promise I wouldn't get on my high horse till at least halfway through. And I'm minutes in and I'm on
it. Do
it. But it's that phrase, isn't it? Right. How many times do we hear the media, even policymakers, talking about the children? You know, we need to catch up. We need to put in these interventions that are going to allow children to catch up.
Mm.
For me, it's the wrong phrase, or it's at least aimed at the wrong people, because the very notion of the phrase catch up means that you once had it. Okay, so that it was there for you to have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, these poor children can't catch up to something that they don't know or have never had. These are a whole new generation of children who were born into a world that was discombobulated and just broken at its core. We had no idea when the light was going to shine again. We had no idea when normal, in inverted commas, was going to come back. So how can we ask them to catch up to children whose lives was completely different before the pandemic? I actually think, you know, it's us as educators that need to catch up. right? We need to position ourselves so much better in an understanding that the children in our early year settings right now are really desperate for a different style of education.
Mm.
You know, we understand a lot about how children learn the interplay between different relationships, right? To get deep, and again, you know, so early into this, if we think about something like Brofenbremer's ecological system, where, you know, children have their immediate family and then like the next bit, the next bit, the next bit. Some of these children are 4 years old and their world has been as small as just their immediate family.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we expect them to go out into that kind of second, third, or even fourth level of interaction and adults confident and full of that kind of emotional resilience and energy when they've not ever experienced it? And I just think it makes me really sad that we can't see the role that we should be playing in that.
Mm-hmm.
And we deflect it back on the children and kind of say, right, well, the children need to catch up. We need them here on physical development. We need them here on, you know, here, there, and everywhere. And I'm like, do you know really what I truly, almost in my core, see, hear, and believe that these children need is presence from us as an emotionally available adult, but also just some time to navigate now this new space they find themselves in with their peers. You know, because once upon a time, pre-COVID, these children probably spent lots of time with people the same height, the same age, or a little bit taller, or a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
They were inundated and surrounded by it in parks, in, you know, think about pre-COVID, what the average weekend looked like. It definitely involved, for some parents, a soft play, or a park, or a swimming lesson, or a dance lesson, you know, all those wonderful things. And then the pandemic came along and stripped that away.
Yeah.
So these children haven't had freedom to explore with each other. You know, I notice children when I watch them in my nursery, they are at least, I'm going to stick my neck out on this one, 2 years, I'd say, behind those stages of play where we would usually expect a four-year-old to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching four-year-olds that are not yet able to engage in that kind of pro-social play. They're just playing alongside each other. We would usually see coming out of our baby room, definitely in our toddler room. And I just think there's definitely a serious lack in those serve and return interactions. You know, it reminds me of when my eldest daughter was a little girl, my mum, bless her, she's no longer with us and hasn't been with us for a number of years, but my mum was a real stickler for, look at grandma when you're talking to me, look at grandma. Now, I know there are the kind of movements around whether or not that's okay or not, but it definitely teaches children about that kind of the art of conversation, I think I want to call it.
Right, right.
You know, I really notice there's a difference in how children communicate with each other.
Mm.
You know, it's a lot more, actually, we're guilty of doing this as well ourselves with children around command and demand.
Oh, yes.
So there's a lot of sit here, do this, over here, have a drink, take your shoes off, hang your coat up, go to the toilet.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of conversations that spark children to think.
Mm.
We're not sparking that kind of metacognition and letting children understand that we think as adults and sharing those moments with them so they have opportunity to think. I notice it with children, you know, they don't converse with each other. They are mini versions of these commanding and demanding adults. And it makes me really sad because I think children can spark some wonderful conversations. Their curiosity, their awe and wonder that the world presents them is really amazing. Like if you literally sit alongside kind of a 3 or 4 year old and take the time to be present in their world without leading or taking over, they are really curious little beings.
Mm. And they are so funny.
Oh my goodness,
like the things that they come out with, it's like, I would never have thought of something like that. And you do get to see literally a different perspective on the world, don't you? So I think there is something to be said about learning from our kids as well as them learning from us.
I totally, and I think there was a lot going on from an educator's point of view during COVID, right? Like you said, it's almost 4 years ago. So from that kind of period, 23rd of March, which is when I suspended my services in my nursery, until the 18th of May, we were all at home, okay? All of my team were waiting for the return. We were in constant contact with our parents and we were doing some virtually type stuff. But what was really fascinating is just that kind of pressure that was on us as educators to get ready for the children, for these children that we didn't know what to expect. You know, everything was the unexpected. Now that's exhausting.
I'm going to be honest, Lucy, it was terrifying for me. Like and I'm not even exaggerating here. I had to have a lot of therapy work to do with this. And I was diagnosed with PTSD after this because when the lockdown came, I lost my job because I was a supply teacher at the time.
Right.
And it was that loophole that independent and, you know, business owners, like I'm sure a lot of childminders and people who had were feeling this too, supply, you were just skipped. You were you were missed in that net of, all right, the government will come and give you. We weren't included in that. And I lost everything. I lost my house. I lost my job. I lost everything. Mm. But then it was like, okay, well, I had to go and move in with my parents. And it was honestly horrendous. And then having to try and find a job and put myself at risk, because obviously everyone was saying, we don't know what COVID is. The whole world's locking down. It was absolutely terrifying. I've got autoimmune diseases, but I was like, I have to pay the bills.
Yeah.
I'm going to send leaflets to all of my family's kids and be like, you know what? You're doctors and nurses. Let me go and babysit your children while you go and do life-saving work.
Yeah.
I had to put myself at risk in order to pay the bills. Honestly, it was absolute. So even, I know we're talking a lot about the kids, quite rightfully so, but also, like you say, where was our headspace as educators, as practitioners, as parents, as families?
As people.
Oh my God. Like, yes.
I remember describing it once as, I felt like as a early years business owner, as a mum, I've got 5 children of my own. So, you know, at the time that COVID happened was when I was launching the Profitable Nursery Academy. Okay. So as much as I'd got an established business, the nursery, I'd also got a new fledgling business. So I felt like it was coming at me from all angles. But I remember describing it as, it's like somebody had said, I need you to go out and run 100 meters. So you prepare yourself, you get yourself ready, and you go out and you run hard for 100 meters. And then as you cross the line, they kept going, can you do another 100?
Mm-hmm.
So again, you go, okay, yep, just one more 100. And I think what the reason I tried to use that analogy is I felt that, like, if you'd have told me that COVID was going to be here for 2 years.
Yes.
And during that time, I needed to manage my energy, my work, my commitments, my children, myself, and everything. I could have done it.
Mm.
But I think it was because it was this constant
unknown.
It's this long. You know, there's lots of kind of theories around the cognitive load of decisions that we needed to make, definitely as early years leaders, but even as educators. Okay, like you've just explained there, not only are you deciding about whether or not you want to go to work, now there's all this complexity around, should I?
Mm.
Will I die if I go to work? Which sounds dramatic, but we were being told that that was a very real, possible kind of thing that had happened if you did go to work. Now, how can we, as educators, be emotionally available for the children when we're done?
Right.
We were spent. Now, this is a little kind of side note. I've got a first class honours degree in education studies. Okay. I resigned about 15 minutes into homeschooling. We went to the shed where I work from in my garden with all of the enthusiasm of lockdown. We'd got the books, you know, Travis had even put his little school's top on. Like, we were going to go and boss it, right? 15 minutes. I think 15 minutes is me being generous. I think that included the time walking to the shed. Because I just couldn't do it.
No.
Right? I think I'm an all right mum. Maybe don't survey my children to back that up. But I think I'm an all right mum. They're doing all right. But at the same time, it's like the pressure on me to now navigate the uncertainty that was unfolding was huge. And the reason I kind of, sorry to take us back there, but I think what I'm trying to say here is, even if you were a lucky person in COVID, and by lucky, I mean you had a garden, you managed to not lose anybody significant to you during that time, and were able to just plod through, then there are still chances that the children have not had a fully cultural capitaled introduction into the world.
Absolutely.
Right? I remember sitting in lockdown and trying to explain to people, you know, like when we were like a couple of years in, and saying, we've now lived in kind of with like the social restrictions on our lives for a year, let's say, or 6 months. If you're 4 years old, that's a quarter of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the equivalent for me would be kind of 10, 15 years of it. Yeah. Maybe 10. Yeah, let's not age myself too much. 10 years. Let's be careful how many years I add on.
You mean
there.
5 years, dear? Five, you know.
No, because I'm 43. So actually, the reality is, you know, a quarter of my life, like theirs, would be a considerable amount of time. And I think that was the magnitude of it. And I also think, you asked my children, right? And they had a lovely time in COVID. They really loved the fact that they weren't in the mundane of school. But at the same time, I think, especially Travis, actually, the youngest, is probably out of, he doesn't understand the real benefits of school because his schooling has been so sporadic. And I think it's a crazy place to be. And I think, remembering all of that mayhem, so not only are we living with COVID, not only have we got the social restrictions, not only have we got the uncertainty of just death, we also revise our EYFS.
Oh, don't even, yeah.
Like, right, we decide in 2021, the best time to change the playing field or amend the rules or adapt what we're going to deliver is right at a time when the primary driver was sneezing in our elbows and washing our hands, okay? We were
2 meters.
Not concerned. Yeah. During that time, we were not concerned about high quality pedagogy.
No.
We were concerned about keeping children safe, cross-contaminating and infecting yep. themselves with this disease, right?
Yeah.
So we know, as adults, you read any book on creating a new habit or learning a new skill, you need 21 days to create a new habit. Okay, you need 10 years to master something, but in just 21 days, you can create a new habit. Well, this sneezing in your elbow and washing your hands for 20 seconds and staying 2 meters apart was our life, was priority in our life for a very long time, years. So is it difficult to think that we got lost? We forgot our purpose. So then when we're trying to go back to it and we're using phrases like catch up and do this, that and the other, we've also got a new revised early years foundation stage to come to grips with. So we've got new children that have got new needs and a new outlook on life, mixed with a new early years foundation stage framework, mixed with most adults, that's a big statement, but I'm sticking with it, I like it, in a real kind of fight or flight, like you said, you know, and thank you for sharing that, you know, you had actual PTSD. Most people have had some form of trauma response to living the life through COVID.
Yeah.
Whether it's an extreme or just a low level, like I said, it shook the world. The world was hurting. And I think if we really want to make sure that we are supporting the children, I genuinely believe we've got to start with the adults.
Yes, 100%.
And there's all those cliches we could start now with, like, put your own safety mask on first. And
can't fill from an empty cup. Yeah, look at us.
But you know what? In the cliche is the hard truth. I saw something the other day that said, if all you had today was 40% and you gave that 40%, you've just given 100% of what you had.
Exactly. Right?
And I feel like whoop in the air and going like, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so true. I think one of the big things that I've really noticed is as the children have kind of not lost their way, but are different, we've got so caught up, I think, in driving educational outcomes, right? So maybe under the pre-notion of catching up or next steps, don't get me started on that. We'll come back. But I think, yeah, we've got so caught up in these academic achievements that because we're through the right place, right, everything we're doing comes from a real innate sense that we want to make sure these children have everything that they need, okay? As a result, we're putting the pressure on ourselves to deliver. Do you know what these children actually need? They need us to slow down. We have forgotten that there is magical learning that happens in mundane. Children like repetition. They like consistency. They actually like us as adults, right? I know, right? And you just think, some of them really like me, actually. And then when I'm feeling down, I'm like, I know where I'm going.
Yeah.
Hi, children. Who wants to give me a cuddle? Oh,
exactly. Yeah.
But what I mean by this is, like, I watch this quite a lot and I see it's like we've got a routine and we're going to almost burn ourselves out under this misguided notion that the routine must happen or else.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to know what else is, because I don't think it's what we think it is. And what I mean by that is, when I say to educators, right, just stop. Stop everything. Don't think about planning. Don't think about anything for a moment. Take a breath. Ground yourself. Take a few kind of real deep, purposeful breaths. And then now look around your room. And they're like, all right, yeah, something's different. Nothing's different apart from them. Right? We can't educate these children when we are so wound up ourselves. And there is so much to be seen and so much to experience when we slow down.
I think you've actually picked on something quite interesting there, because I feel like when we're talking about COVID and now, like you say, the most important thing, I think, is being present.
Yeah.
And we weren't able to do that during COVID because we were fearful of the future. So we weren't in the present. So like you say, no matter if we had a relatively calm experience of lockdown or not, we were still not in the present. We had to be thinking about the future. The entire world was. It just turned everything upside down. So we could not be present with ourselves. We could not be present with our businesses, with our children, with our families, with anything. And then I feel like now we've come out of COVID and, you know, like you say, this word catch-up's been thrown around. We're now looking at the past.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, we're still not being present here. This is just the same problem in the wrong direction. You're missing the point, people. Presence.
They all say, don't they, you know, anxiety is that living in the future and fear of the future. Depression is that sense of reflecting and melancholy about what's been. It is a gift. That's why it's called the presence, right? And I know, again, that's another one of those cliches, but it is so true. When I talk to educators and I get them to stop and slow down, or even just stop, and we have a different day, or we start to talk about those moments that they've captured where they don't feel burnt out, that they don't feel stressed, they feel like everything is just amazing, that's because they've taken the pressure off themselves, right? Children will play. It's innately in them. You don't have to have the most Pinterestable tough tray to encourage children to learn. Children will learn from just you being there and responding in that real sensitive, like I keep saying, emotionally available way. The best gift you can give a child is a smile when they don't expect it, right? Think about, we're trying to instill under the characteristics of effective learning, we want to understand how they play and explore. We want to understand how they think critically. So in order to do that, we've got to give them opportunities to fail,
mm-hmm.
right? We've got to support them in their failures, so that kind of experiential learning takes place. You don't watch a baby stand up for the first time, then say, brilliant, that's crossed off their development record. Right, little Johnny, you've got your balance. Can you hop?
You're so right.
But we just don't do it. No. In fact, if we actually said that, we'd be like, oh my goodness, why? And I just think we're doing that with this, again, misguided notion that children have to go to the next level of development all the time. You know what? Sometimes a next step in a beautifully crafted sequence of learning is doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
Next step is sometimes to the side. Dare I say it, the next step is sometimes wombat.
That's right. Failure is learning.
Cha cha cha. Not, you know, one in front of the other. And I just think
learning is a cha cha cha. But can you please make a t-shirt? That sounds great.
It does actually, doesn't it? But yeah, I just think to myself, like, they don't have to do the thing that comes next in whichever development book of choice you use, Development Matters or Birth to Five. The next thing isn't necessarily the next thing. The next thing can be the same thing, the thing before, the thing to the side. And I'll always say that if you want to understand what I mean, think about when a baby learns to walk. You know, we don't just, like I said, watch them stand and then ask them to hop. But how guilty are we of doing that with every other area of learning? My biggest ask of my colleagues in our sector is we really give children time to understand themselves and their bodies. You know, back to that command and demand thing, you know, rather than saying, right, who wants a drink? Okay, it's a great thing. It gets the desired result. Me, not me. How about this? Children, can you help Lucy think about something? I've got a bit of a funny feeling in my tummy. I can't work out quite what it is, but it's kind of going, rah! It's like it wants to talk to me. Did yours do that? Does anybody? Yours is doing it now. Can you feel it? Wow. What do we think's going on?
Waits for answers. However long they take, because that's the other thing. Shut up, educators. Give the child time to answer. Anyway. So we get some answers and then we start to say, maybe we're hungry.
And there's lots of visual cues in your face, lots of smiling, lots of responding without words. You know, that where you lift your eyebrows and you smile and you give them that kind of facial expression that's saying, I know you've got this answer. You know, I'm here when you're ready. Because then that way the children have learnt to understand physical sensations within their body, but not only understand a physical sensation in their body, they're also understanding how to respond to that sensation. How many children, bless them, will tell their parents that they've got a tummy ache? You know, funny story. Lived experience with said youngest child, Travis. We were going to Tenerife one year. This is a note to always pay attention to children who tell you they have a funny tummy.
Uh-oh.
So very long story short, Travis is telling me he's got a tummy ache. I'm saying, you're just excited, darling. We're going on holiday. Of course that is. Is it rumbling and feeling like this and little pins and needles in your fingers? I'd just done my emotional well-being training as well. So I was on. Get to the airport, give him some chicken nuggets. He's still saying his tummy's feeling funny. I'm still telling him he's just excited, maybe a little nervous. So we then go through passport control and I give him a chocolate milkshake.
Oh my God.
Yep, you know where this is going, right?
Yeah.
As we buckle ourselves into our Ryanair, other airlines are available, seats, and we start to taxi just as the airplane starts to go really fast to tip its nose in the air, Travis looks at me and goes, Mummy, I feel really fun.
No. Chundertown.
Chicken nuggets were flying up the aisle. Air hostess comes running towards me, I think to like save me. He turns on the air vent and runs back to his seat. I'm literally sat there with like chicken nuggets and chocolate milkshake. I'm in the three, so it's like me, Travis, and my eldest daughter, Leah. And then this side is like my husband and some of the other children. No, it was a couple with the children behind us. And honestly, my husband's like that, looks over, looks back forward, puts his headphone back on and like sinks down as if
no,
he doesn't know me. I'm like, oh my goodness. So yeah, note to self. Sometimes children need the language for understanding how the emotions feel in their body. Sometimes they just don't feel well.
I feel like we've all been there. Like, I'm sure every one of us who's listening has got a story where either it's been in a setting or their own kids, like you on holiday, being like, oh, I don't feel, oh, you know, I've got, oh, something's wrong. Oh, you'll be fine.
And you're like, oh, whoops.
You're not fine.
you're not.
The face of the couple that sat next to my husband on the journey home when we all got on the same plane again, they kind of went,
no.
Oh, God. I don't know, it was fine. It was a bug. We've all had it, but we're all fine now. We're going to fly with everything inside.
Oh, that's so funny. But a funny story as this is, it's a good story because it's teaching us actually we need to listen to our kids. And what are our kids telling us right now from the whole COVID experience? What are they saying right now? These expectations that we're here before them do not apply to them. We need to listen to where they are now.
And you know what? That's that whole thing again that links back to presence, isn't it? You know, we need to teach these children at the point of learning. And what I mean by that is, yes, as adults, we need to ensure that we have planned a sequence of learning that is going to support their development. Not the activity necessarily. Mm. The activity is the thing that we use to hook them in to our intended learning. Okay. But I think in order for us to really implement that sequence of learning, we've got to understand the children. We've got to be present with them. We have got to be able to notice a moment where they might be deeply involved in play of some description. The skilled educator goes into like stealth mode. We don't go in and throw a log on their learning by going, hello, what colour is that? And how many do you have? And what's next? And where are you going to put it?
Yeah.
We tiptoe in.
Mm-hmm.
And we sit, like the children do, on the periphery. We wait to be invited in. We are not there to spout our years of experience and knowledge all over their play. We're there to facilitate learning in the moment. So when an opportunity arises, I feel like this is like some kind of like David Attenborough. When the moment arises, the skillful educator nudges her way into the group.
Okay, you need to do this now. So I'm expecting some YouTube shorts of Lucy going in and, right, sorted.
The children have noticed that she's there, but are not yet acknowledging her. He doesn't pounce. She waits to be allowed in. But it literally is that, isn't it? And it's like,
it is.
I think we see... And again, this is, educators are not doing any of these things for negative reasons. They're not intentionally getting this wrong. I think what a lot of often I see is they lack the system in place to keep them on track. We educators are like bowling balls. Stay with me on this one. At the We've gone from David Attenborough's Discovery Channel to bowling.
I love it.
Yeah, we're bowling balls, right? And at the end, the pins are our desires and our dreams and the teaching and the learning and the children. The trouble we have is, unless we have those buffers up on the side, the chances are we can land in the gutter and completely miss all of the pins, right?
Absolutely.
So systems and processes, i.e., the buffers at the side, what they allow us to do as educators is aim for where we want to go, maybe too fast or not fast enough, or maybe we wobble down the way. But with those buffers, things, for example, like peer observation, recording your own practice and playing it back and really critiquing what you saw, even recording the same observation from three different points to get three different views, really deeply reflecting through the lens, though, of accountability, ownership and responsibility, not blame, excuses and denial, to really notice where we could have made improvements. Because actually, quite often, our heads are so full. We have so many things that we think we need to think about. We've got decision fatigue. We're not emotionally available. We're probably only firing on 40%. And then the children are presenting. Children's behaviour is a direct reflection of your practice, right? I'm going to stand by that statement that I made about 15 years ago until I'm proven wrong on it. Now, I can tell you, every educator whose classroom or room or environment is working smoothly stands there like, yes, this is a reflection of my practice. It's quite the opposite one when I'm going, well, the children's behaviour is a direct reflection of your practice when it looks like something out of Toy Story 3. And they're like, me? How is this me? And I'm like, don't shoot the messenger, but actually. But it's true. And I know that children need something different from us. And I do know and I respect that we are seeing an increase in children who have got additional needs and need additional things from us. And I really hear from my heart when people say, and how can I do it? I've got this priority, this priority, this priority, this priority, this priority.
Yeah.
How can I now do this, 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 and this? Do you know what I'd say? Sack off all those other priorities and be present.
Mm.
Just for one day. Just one day. I've also got this little theory, right? It's not like a researched with actual hard written evidence. This is from my lived experience for 15 years of having my nursery. But I believe to run an effective and efficient classroom, and I'm going to keep calling them classrooms because it's the easiest way to describe them. This could be your home if you're a childminder, you know, this can be your room or whatever you tend to call the space where we educate children. But within that environment, I believe there are three key roles that you need to run a room effectively and efficiently. The first one is you need a caretaker. Okay, they are the person that is responsible for ensuring that care routines happen timely. So for example, they are the one that's checking that everybody, if they're potty training, is going to the toilet. They might be doing the nappies. They are making sure, remember, it's a statutory requirement that children have free access to water. So however you do that within your setting, they're making sure that it's actually happening. Maybe they are also time checking when snack and looking for the children that are displaying signs of being hungry to make sure they get a snack, or making sure dinner happens or lunch whenever it's time. The second person is the observer. Now, usually you would pop this person in and around maybe the adult-led activity so they can get those real good linked to the sequence of learning that you've set out in the day, but get those really good observations of what the children are doing. But also that person can play a role in being a bit of a bystander to the observation and watching maybe from a more of a dynamics of the room. So they take that kind of helicopter view, they stand back and they look and they observe or notify where those floating children are and see if they can engage those children's interest into something else and just have that more kind of learning perspective and observing what the children are doing with each other and the environment outlook. And then the third person is what I call the presence person. Easily described as, let's say we're doing hairdressers. When you walk in the room, they are the one currently with the apron on, all of the rollers in their hair, usually having a conversation around why Martha actually can't use the real scissors on the floor, right? They're that person.
Yeah. I've been that person several times. Yep.
Me too. That's lived experience. Or if it's a train, you know, they are the one that's going, I've got my ticket. Does anybody want my ticket? Where's my luggage? You know, they are playing. They are playful, they are enjoying the children and everything that is wonderful about working in early years, they are the epitome of. They're able to do that because somebody else is on the care. The person is able to do the care and give that their best because somebody else is playful and enjoying the children. Those two things are able to happen because somebody else is observing the room or a particular activity.
Yeah.
So actually, the net result of those three key responsibilities means the experience that the children get is amazing. They get 100% of the playful adult, they get 100% of the caring adult, and they get 100% of the environment interaction and working with them from three people. Now, I'm not saying that all rooms can have to have three, because some, you know, from a sustainability perspective or even kind of ratios, you might only have two people in your room.
Might only even have one.
You might even only have one.
Many times.
I hope you've got robust lone working policy in place. The kind of carer and the observer are roles that can interlink with each other. I would never want to interlink the person that is present with the children in any other responsibility.
But see, this is it. We feel like you've picked up on something really important here. I'm just thinking, as you were saying all three of those things, I was like, yeah, I was trying to be all three all the time. And I think a lot of us resonate with that there is such an expectation on what we need to do. We're doing like 7 different roles in one. We're being the caregiver, we're being the observer, we're being the present person, we're being the one who moves learning on, we're being the safeguard, we're being, you know, and it's like, it is a lot. We can't manage all of it. And I think a lot of that, maybe controversially, has a lot to do with policymakers.
Yeah, maybe.
Systems. Yeah. And
or lack thereof.
Or lack thereof that have been put upon us, like you say, to follow the system that we have been following thus far. And as we can see now, because COVID changed everything, is not fit for purpose.
No. And I think what's really interesting is that you mentioned that there about kind of policymakers. And quite often, I think one of the most powerful questions we can have as early years educators and also early years leaders and managers is why. And what I mean by that is we need to become like those seagulls on Finding Nemo. Like, why? I know they're saying mine, but we need to be like, why? Because actually, quite often in early years, we are very guilty of losing direction. You know, think back to like the bowling ball.
Mm.
We do that quite often. We just kind of get in that. It's because it's how we do it around here. Or we're not creating psychologically safe working environments as adults. We're not ever going to question why something happens. There's a really famous saying in the military that if you walk past something that you know is below standard and you let it happen, you've just created a new standard.
Ooh.
And what happens then is if the level is so high and you've seen something that's below that level and you let it happen, that new lower level is where it's at now.
Mm.
We have whistleblowing policies in place, but what can be really tricky in early years is actually, and arguably, the most effective early years environments as an adult to work in is one where it is friendship based. So there is a study by Gallup that says if you have a best friend at work, you're more productive, you're more engaged, and you are actually a better, inverted commas, worker, okay? Which is wonderful in an office. What about in a sector where we actually could at any moment have to go and say to our leader or manager, you know, my best mate Bronwyn, she's just XYZ. From a safeguarding perspective, we have a duty to ensure that our whistleblowing policies are safe and robust. That's what keeps children safe. But it can be quite difficult when also we want to create a working environment where there's trust. And I actually think underpinning all of that is that thing that I've just mentioned, and that's that psychological safety. If you don't know what it is, psychological safety is about creating environments where shortly, quickly, and many of the authors that are the experts in this will probably cringe at my very quick version of it. But my understanding of psychological safety is I'm going to create an environment where I'm going to support you to fail. Google did this, right? Google actually created a culture where failure was celebrated. It was no longer shamed. It wasn't guilted. It wasn't brushed on the carpet. It was brought to the forefront and seen as an opportunity to learn. And actually in early years, is that not what we want? We want it for the children, for sure.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, we want
it. We do it for the kids, but do we do it for each other? No.
No, because we're... Right. Everything I say comes from a place of kindness and love.
Is this a little disclaimer here, Lucy?
Yeah, right. Literally. And I genuinely mean that, right? So I care about my sector, I care about my community, I care about my country, I care about everything, right? Because a little bit of a stoic, I believe that people are inherently good and with the right environment and the right support, when people work to their strengths, that goodness can come out, okay?
Yeah.
So everything I do comes from a place of kindness and love. Let's talk about bogeys. If I...
Go on.
If I had a bogey on my nose, right, would you tell me?
Yes.
Would you like... straight out be like, look, Lucy, got a bogey on your nose there. Like,
Yeah. I do that for my, that's a bit weird. I do that for my, but if we're out in public, I'm like, you got a, do you right.
A parent comes to the door, dropping off their child. Newish parent, not much of a relationship between you and that parent. Big, green, slimy caterpillar style bogey hanging from their nose. Would you tell them?
Probably not. Because I don't know them enough. I don't want to offend them. Like, I'm trying to help, but I don't know if they'll receive that as...
So right there, we have a very quick analysis of kindness.
Oh, no.
Rooniness empathy, Kim Scott calls it in her book, Radical Candor. Because as humans, we want to be kind. We want to be nice.
Yeah.
We're not prepared to rumble with that moment of uncomfortableness in ourselves to do some good for somebody else, right? We justify it ourselves by going, oh, they'll be embarrassed. They won't like it. I can probably tell you, as somebody who has had a bogey on their nose, I'd rather you tell me, you that notices it, then allow me to walk around all day with a big fat caterpillar
right
out the nose, right?
Oh, Lucy, you just called me out, girl.
So what you need is, again, as Kim Scott calls it, radical candor. You need to care personally enough about somebody to challenge them directly. Like you said, with friends, with people who you know, it's easier because we know that they know we're coming from a place of kindness and love.
Exactly. They know our intentions and our intentions are good. Right.
Yeah.
My God, you're so right.
But at the end of the day, we can do that with each other. If we create a culture as adults where we say, do you know what? From this day forward, we are going to care personally enough about each other to challenge things directly.
Mm.
We are no longer just going to be nice. We're not going to be cheerleaders and allow all of these substandard, impractical, and just things that we just are a bit meh to keep happening. We're going to actually kindly, because you can also be a, you know, a what's it hole about all of this.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you now just walk around being horrid to everybody.
Yeah, no.
Because that's not what we're talking about.
No.
I'm saying that we walk towards those courageous conversations, mm-hmm. right? And notice there my choice of word. I often see people talking about the art of difficult conversations. Do you need to have a difficult conversation with your parents? Difficult, difficult, difficult. And I'm like, right, time out.
Mm.
No conversation I have with any parent is ever difficult.
Mm.
Sometimes I need to go and have a courageous conversation with them. Now, that shift in language is really important because rather than me going into something presupposing it's going to be difficult, I'm going into it thinking I need to have a little bit of courage to do this. Already, it's a different mindset on me. So actually, thinking about, you know what, can I just offer you some feedback? Always contract when you're going to give somebody some feedback. And actually, if they say no, don't push.
Exactly. Yeah.
And just say to them, oh, okay, then, if now's not a good time, can we catch up? Blah. Make that contract first and then say to them, right, I just wanted to say, I've just noticed this happen. And actually, what I found really interesting is, did you know this, blah, 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 and have a conversation with them. Now, as the receiver of feedback, remember, it's okay for that to hurt.
Mm.
It's natural to feel like you want to defend. But I say to you, how about the next time somebody offers you feedback and you do want to cry or lash out or attack? Because remember, quite often, attack is a natural form of defense. Sit with it for a minute. Say nothing. Count to 10 and just think, okay. Thank the person and say, right, thank you ever so much for giving that feedback. I'm going to go and reflect on it and do that. I remember once we used to have reflection journals at the nursery. I'm going back like loads of years here. And the idea was is that I was encouraging, this was like the precursors to us creating this psychologically safe environment. So the idea was is that my team could journal their genuine thoughts, ideas, and da-da-da. I would take them away, I would read them, and I would give my comments.
Hmm.
But I'm really, really firm on, I will have a conversation with anybody. I think I've already mentioned this today. If they turn up ready to be accountable, take ownership and take responsibility. Even in the darkest of moments, even in the most catastrophic of failure, I want to hear accountability, ownership, and responsibility.
Mm.
Walk towards me and all you're going to do is blame, make excuses, and be in denial about your part in it, then we're not going to have a conversation. And actually, it's brave. It doesn't happen overnight. And there is often tears and tantrums. But actually, the net result over a period of time, if you all commit to this as a team together is that you're creating the sort of environment where everybody feels emotionally supported, everybody feels valued, everybody gets to turn up the best version of themselves. People start to work towards their strengths naturally. And that, you know, it becomes a nicer place to be in. There is no longer fear of failing. People don't go away going, oh my goodness, I did that wrong. What's going to happen?
Yes.
People say, oh my goodness, I did that wrong. Who's helping me? And it's what we need. And do you know what the children see? The children see these more knowledgeable others, that's us by the way, getting it wrong.
Yeah.
And actually, we then absolutely role model growth mindsets.
I was just about to say.
And what more do we want for our children other than to realise that getting it wrong is okay, especially now in a society where perfection is given this like front row seat, where filters and social media have us all in one breath going, well, I know it's only social media, it's not real, but at the same time, mindlessly scrolling, putting ourselves down. You know, we've got a generation of influencers who influence through their positivity, but we never really get to see the true cost of that. You know, and I just think, is this what is leading us to feeling burnt out all the time? These unrealistic expectations on us not only as educators, but as human beings. It's like a gazillion crises out there right now. The first thing I'll always say to people is turn the news off for a week, come back to me and let's talk about your actual lived experience and let's look for some solutions. Not through toxic positivity, right? I think that can also be
just as damaging.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on about the reality of life. As your leader and manager, what do you, and again, this is how I, as a leader, I'll always craft my conversations with my team in this way. What do you need from me? Do you need me to listen or do you need a response? Because sometimes people just want you to sit in the dirt with them. You know, there are some great books for children written. I wish I was in my other room because I could show you some of them, but there are some amazing books that are genuinely written for children where I sometimes sit with my team and I'm like, let's just have a little story.
Right.
I wanted to hear. You know, like, and
like, where are these adult books for us? Why is it just for their children? Let's.
Well, the adult books are there, but they've just got so many more words and not enough pictures.
No, I like the pictures. No. But you've picked up on so many amazing things here. I think it all boils down to get rid of this word catch up. It shouldn't exist.
Yep.
This is just a new playing field, and we've got to learn to meet the kids where they're at, which is by being present and actually taking that ownership. But also, like you say, being present with each other, creating that environment where we can kindly challenge each other, but also kindly challenge the system, the policies that we have been told to follow. And just, you know what, just go, be present, go with the flow, get rid of these expectations on ourselves, on our children, and just be. And we've had a lot of response actually about this episode, because I told lots of people, all of our followers on social media, that you were going to be coming on and we're going to be talking about this. And a lot of our customers were saying the same things. They were struggling with the children, that they're not as independent as past cohorts, that a lot of children have difficulty regulating themselves, high percentage of speech and language needs, toilet training. Like, there's all these maybe new behaviors, like you said, not meeting the expectations of what we've been told they are. But, you know, this is just kind of the new norm. What would you say to those people who are seeing these new behaviors?
Meet the children where they're at very shortly. Stop thinking that they should be doing this. See what they're doing. So when you described all those things there, my head goes straight away to, oh, amazing toilet training, right? We can do some great activities around going to the toilet, knowing where it is. You know, we're talking about big emotions. Let's have times where we are jumping up and we're being loud, but then we're going small and we're being quiet. You know, stop fighting against these children, what they want and need, with our misguided adult agenda. Go to where they're at. Be a facilitator on their journey, walk alongside them and let them see who you are so you can see who they are, and then you go together. Co-regulation starts with you as the adult being regulated first.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put a tornado out with a hurricane or whatever that saying is. We do it so often, don't we? Like, ah, why are you all shouting?
Yeah.
You are.
You're so right. It's like, it's always coming back to, you know what, look after ourselves first. Be the role model. Show people, show our children how to fail, how to learn, growth mindset. And just, I love it. I feel like a lot of us will want to see more from you after this episode. So before you go, please tell us, where can we find you? What projects have you got coming up? Where can we go and contact you? Should we want to know more?
So I am on LinkedIn, Lucy Lewin on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place to find me. Or you can Google me, check me out at theprofitablenurseryacademy.com. Lots of things. I'm kind of in and around all the kind of expo-y type shows and things that are around. Always got something to say on one of them. I would be on a stage. But reach out. I'm always happy as well. If you send me an email, I'll always respond. And the thing I'll probably do first of all is ask you to jump on a call with me. I actually prefer you to sit down, not jump. But anyway, it's just easier to take you in what you're saying if you sat still. Yeah, I'm always available. You know, I can't say all this thing about psychological safety and being present and offer this support. I don't want to run away. I'm there too. So yeah, reach out to me, ask me, come via you and the Twinkle team or whatever. You'll find me. I'm like Nanny McPhee, right? When you need me but don't want me, I'm there. And when you want me and need me, I'll be gone.
No. It sounds like we will always want and need someone like you, Lewin. And I have a feeling that this is not going to be the end. It's not going to be the end of us. So I think I'm going to see you real soon. But thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, great. Thank you so much, Lucy. It was so enjoyable listening to hear her. Could you hear her passion as well? I definitely could. She's just got that energy, right? It's contagious. And we had so much to talk about. I probably will have another episode in store for you with Lucy. So if you want to watch this space and see some more work with her, if you don't want to wait that long, though, head into our episode description where you can go and find her website, her LinkedIn. Go contact her. Go speak to the lady herself and get it from her. It was great. If you have also got any experiences or opinions or strategies or anything that you would like to talk about or ask, then please get in contact with us on the podcast description. We have the links to all of our social media. Come and get in touch. Come and have a chat with us. We love it. We love to hear from you. And hopefully you love listening too. So until the next episode, have a great day and I'll see you soon. So that's it for today's episode. I hope you really enjoyed it. If you would like to join in or would like to know more, then come and find us on our social media sites. We have a Facebook page, Facebook groups, an Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Pinterest, and YouTube. All the links of where to find us will be in our podcast description. Come and join the conversation. And whatever you're doing today, I hope you have a great day.